From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this update. Oil prices spiked 10 days ago after news broke that the U.S. killed an Iranian military leader. And again last week when Iran retaliated by firing missiles at a U.S. military base in Iraq. If you've been following that news, it may surprise you to know that oil prices, at least for Alaska's North Slope crude, are now lower than they were before tensions boiled over. As Rasha McChesney from Alaska's Energy Desk reports, the Middle East just doesn't have the same impact on the market for Alaska's oil that it used to.
Roger Marks is a retired state petroleum economist. I called him to ask what all of the tension in the Middle East was going to do to oil prices.
You know, nobody knows. Anyone who tells you they know, that's a sign they don't know what they're talking about. So
Marks worked in Alaska's Department of Revenue, watching what was happening politically and the oil market's response to it for 25 years.
Right. I was there when Iraq invaded Kuwait. You know, I was there when the U.S. invaded Iraq both times.
For decades, disruptions in the Middle East caused a lot of sustained turmoil in the oil market. Mark says during the first Gulf War in the early 90s, prices jumped up and stayed up for almost a year. And they did jump up last week. Alaska North Slope crude got to nearly $71 on January 7th. But they dropped pretty dramatically the next day, and that in part is because the world is very different now than it was in the 90s or in the early 2000s. Marks points to the attacks on an oil field and processing facility in Saudi Arabia in September. That knocked out more than 5% of the world's daily oil production. It was the biggest disruption to global oil supply in decades, and Alaska North Slope crude prices jumped to their highest in months, adding nearly $8 for one day. Then they dropped right back down. And for Alaska, a one-day spike in oil prices just doesn't really mean much for the state's bottom line. But that dynamic, the oil market shrugging off attacks on oil and gas infrastructure in the Middle East, there are some economists cautioning that it's probably not going to last forever. Richard Nephew is a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. But he used to work for the U.S. government at the State Department. There, he was the lead sanctions person during the negotiations with Iran under President Barack Obama. And Nephew says there are three reasons the oil market isn't as reactive to geopolitics in the Middle East as it used to be. The first, right now, there's enough supply that there's kind of a sense that small, short-term disruptions can be handled. There's enough oil coming from other sources, like Alaska and other parts of the U.S., Venezuela, Libya.
You know, there is enough oil that's just sort of floating around that disruptions in any one of those places can be made up for by supply in many other places.
The second, global demand for crude oil isn't growing like it used to. And finally, recent disruptions have been short-lived. After the attack in September, Saudi Arabia brought its oil production back online within a few days.
Here, you know, we had a spike, and then both Trump and the Iranians said, but we're going to leave the military responses here, so you see things relax.
Nephew says he thinks the people driving the oil markets have gotten complacent. They worry about the possibility of a major disruption in supply in the Middle East, but
they've kind of internalized this idea, but that probably won't happen.
Nephew says that false confidence is a big problem right now because the expectation is that there will be these sharp swings in prices and then things will calm down. But he points out that while Iran may have discounted further military action, there is still the very real possibility that the country could retaliate. And if that happens, if, for instance, Iran were to shut down the Strait of Hormuz that separates it from the Arabian Peninsula, more than 20% of the world's supply of oil comes through there.
The day that we don't have things calm down, the day we do have sustained production losses of 5 million barrels a day or something like that, that's when you're going to see a tremendous rise in prices, and it probably will be sustained for a pretty long period of time.
To balance Alaska's budget, prices would have to hit $91 a barrel and stay there. And from Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
And in other news, an abandoned tugboat floating in the same spot in Juneau's Gastineau Channel for more than a year was noticeably absent Monday morning. Up until now, city and state officials have been reluctant to claim responsibility for dealing with the derelict vessel. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more on that story.
Strong winds and exceptionally high tides over the weekend caused the Lumberman to drag anchor from its position on state tidelands. It drifted south, raising concern that it could endanger private or public property. Port Director Carl Yucatil says the U.S. Coast Guard paid to have the 107-foot vessel towed to one of the city's cruise ship docks, where it remains for now.
Docks and harbors will craft a plan in the coming days to go through the formal process to impound either to scuttle it or to have it disposed of in some legal and responsible manner.
The saga of the lumberman began long before it first broke free of its mooring in 2018. The city had been trying to get the owner of the derelict vessel to move it for months. After it drifted up the channel, the city said it was legally the state's responsibility to dispose of it. But since the lumberman wasn't a navigational hazard, it remained where it was. A local fish hatchery donated an anchor to help keep it in place, and city employees regularly monitored the boat. The nonprofit Marine Exchange of Alaska also placed a transponder on board to keep track of its movement. The Coast Guard paid a salvage company to clean up any hazardous material on board, and a year ago, the city contracted the same company to pump water off the boat to make sure it stayed afloat.
There's a lot of stakeholders involved in nursing the lumberman along, and Mother Nature made its own determination over the weekend and moved it, and so now we'll deal with it in an appropriate manner.
Yucatil says the impound process could involve an auction for the vessel, which still has a good hull. But he says that would come with the understanding that the boat must leave Juneau waters.
We'll put some stipulations that it's we won't allow it to be sold for a dollar and then just moved in some waterway and continue to be a derelict.
Abandoned vessels like the lumberman are not unique to Juneau. Rachel Lord is the executive secretary of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators.
The liability that we see, the public liability with boats that are left or abandoned, it's a real problem, and it's a problem that we see statewide all across our coast and on our rivers.
The organization worked hard to get a bill passed that would prevent scenarios like the lumberman from repeating. SB 92 requires vessel registration with the state and is meant to establish a derelict vessel prevention program and fund to help with disposal costs. It was signed into law in 2018, but implementation has been slow.
It was a huge step in that regard, but like with any law, it's only as good as your capacity or your interest in enforcing it and utilizing it.
Lord says other states dealing with similar problems have had success creating administrative positions specifically tasked with carrying out and overseeing derelict vessel laws. She hopes to see Alaska follow that example. The lumberman is not the first abandoned tug to cause problems in Juneau's waters. The Challenger, another derelict World War II-era tugboat, sank in the Gastineau Channel in 2014. It cost almost $2 million to dispose of. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.
And in other news, a trio of backcountry snowboarders were able to safely escape after being caught in an avalanche in Alaska's Chugach National Forest. The Anchorage Daily News reported that the snowboarders were hiking up a trail when they triggered the avalanche Saturday. The Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center says the avalanche fully buried one person and partially buried another. The person who was fully buried suffered minor injuries while the others were not hurt. The center says the group freed themselves and hiked out. An Alaska State Troopers report says no one else was in the area at that time. And authorities say a man who was carrying a crossbow in public was transported to a hospital after a shooting involving police in Anchorage. The Anchorage Daily News reports that police say the man's condition is unknown after he was shot in the lower torso around 11:30 a.m. Police say no officers were injured. Police were called to the area following multiple witness reports of a man walking around with a crossbow. Area roads were closed, and authorities say they anticipate a heavy police presence in the area for several hours as the investigation continues in Anchorage. And city leaders in Alaska have discussed new taxes to offset declines in revenue from the state, despite voters failing to pass tax proposals as recently as April. Anchorage Daily News reported on Friday that the Anchorage Assembly had held multiple town hall meetings this week to explain the city's financial situation, explore revenue options, and hear comments from the public. Officials say a sales tax and two versions of an alcohol tax were pitched. City officials say the assembly could place multiple proposals on the ballot, but only want one to go before voters. Officials say a proposal must get at least 8 out of 11 member votes to be placed on the ballot. It's 16 degrees in the capital city. You're listening to KTOO.